So we have some exciting news to share with everybody, and that is that Tay and I are going to be doing a live conversation with Dr. Jacqueline Hobbs, aka Oracle Girl, on August 11th, Friday at 7 p.m. UTC. And we're going to be exploring the challenges in these times surrounding our children, the ever-increasing use of technology, and the line on when AI can be beneficial versus when it's problematic, our relationship with our body and the earth, all the physical changes that are going on with people, and particularly with women at this time, with their periods and all sorts of different changes that are going on, weight gain, all of these different things. And we're going to talk about the concept of giving and money and working by no, by donation and so much more. If you're not familiar with Dr. Jacqueline Hobbs, Oracle Girl, then I would check out her work. We've been a part of her work for probably over 3 years now and have found it really, really beneficial. So I hope you guys join us there. We will make sure we put the link in the show notes here, but if you go to oraclegirl.org, you will come across our event, but we'll put a link directly to that. All of her talks are completely by donation. So it goes to, and then she actually takes all of those donations and then supports other types of organizations and communities and groups that she finds very worthwhile to support as well. So it's a really beautiful way of paying the message forward. So check that out because I think it's going to be a really amazing conversation. Now you can catch it live with us or you can watch the pre-record as well, but we'll put the link in the show notes. In today's episode, we talked to Cal Washington, and I think this is a really, really important episode, and I would really appreciate it if people shared this far and wide, because what Cal has come across is really quite amazing. He has been deep through the court systems, and he has come out the other side and really pulled together a lot of this concepts of natural law and common law and merchant law. All of these different things, but he really seems to have developed a system that actually can work and where we can actually hold those responsible for their actions, whether that be in the government or in higher corporations. We can actually hold the individuals responsible for the actions. They can't hide behind big government or big corporations. And so this talk, we get into a lot of the details on this, and Cal's created a group called In Power, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well to go and check out their work. But take a look at this, listen to it, go through it. This is a long episode, so with UK Health, we are cut off at about 52 minutes, is as big as the time slot is. So I encourage you all at the end of this, go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and watch the remaining part of this episode because this episode is about an hour and 45 minutes. And stay tuned to the end because he shares a lot of the different layers of what is going on with this system and why we often feel like we can't get anywhere and that we feel like things just happen and we have no say in things and that we actually do have a say and we can hold companies responsible for things like 5G, for mandatory injections, for geoengineering, and for smart meter technology that's being placed on homes all over the place that's actually causing a lot of people harm. So I encourage you guys to listen to this episode, share it, and let me know your thoughts. I hope you guys are doing well, and make sure you watch the whole episode. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Aspire Health Podcast, also playing on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. And we are continuing on with the series in
Creating New Earth, a collaborative mission. We're really excited for this episode because we've been diving into this content in a very synchronistic sort of sequences and events and interactions that have led us to Mr. Cal Washington. And we're going to be talking about natural law, common law, civil law, what all those terms mean and how they are relevant to you, especially at our time that we are currently all navigating through. And thank you so much for joining us and for your time, Mr. Cal Washington.
Honored to be here with
It's
fellow British Columbians and
that's right. That's right. Yeah, which we all like what Tay was saying, most of these guests that we meet, when we come up with a concept and then it literally like they just start coming into our field of views. I mean, some of them we're aware of ahead of time, but then it just like they all trickle in and it's just like this tapestry that just starts to get filled in. And this concept of creating new Earth covers a lot of areas. And I'm just going to introduce Cal here with you too, because we came across Cal's work very recently. I mean, it really went in
2 weeks.
Yeah, really in Canada when Bill C-47 came through, which I've talked about before, and lots of the just lots more government overreach that I think is taking place. We, you know, it starts to open up to look for other options around things and how do you start to deal with stuff. And then we came across Cal's work and we dove into that, and that opened up to several other people. And it's just been one thing after another. But Cal Washington is an empowerment advocate and contractor who has stumbled into knowledge leading to an extraordinary experience within the systems of commerce and justice. As co-founder of the In Power movement, he's dedicated to sharing his knowledge to help people truly take back their power and hold accountable those involved in agendas causing harm. Cal explains how men and women worldwide can hold public officials and CEOs accountable for causing widespread harm with trespassing technology. He has co-authored a new commercial liability action to solve the smart meter problem, as well as the 5G rollout, mandatory vaccinations, and geoengineering. In this episode, we are going to dive into how it works, why it works, and how each of us can participate. So, Cal, this is going to be really fun, I think, and it's going to shine a light on a concept that I think a lot of people maybe have kind of heard about a little bit, but don't really know too much about. So thanks again for joining us.
No, again, I'm honored to be here. So
where to jump in this this topic? I think maybe what would be really helpful for people would be, you know, you were a construction contractor, musician, family guy, and then all of a sudden you got thrown into this world of law and commerce and basically had to go down rabbit hole after rabbit hole to figure out what your personal rights were. I'd love to hear a bit of your background story on just how you arrived to where you are now.
Well, it all started, like I said, like was said, I was just a normal guy, had a mortgage, family, 5 girls, wife, no pets, but, you know, a couple cars, just living the normal middle class kind of life. And I was in construction, both as a contractor and installer. So, you know, I'm skilled in construction and sales. So, and management, that kind of thing. So that was my vocation. I was a drummer as well and you know, semi-professional, still am. And, you know, member of a church, that kind of thing, just a normal middle class Canadian life. And then I went through a divorce. And my life completely changed at that point, as many can attest to that kind of thing. It's emotionally draining. And, you know, your life is kind of, the rug is pulled out from under you, under your feet. So I was just dealing with that. And then I was immersed in the court because of divorce, and I had not really been in court maybe a couple times in my life, you know, traffic and the odd little thing, but nothing, not where I was immersed in it like this, where, you know, have to keep coming back. And everything else was just one day kind of things, right? Very straightforward, in and out. But this was different. And so that was how I got into it. It was through a divorce. And how I got into understanding that there's something going on in the world was during the divorce. I went on a website, and it was called Dad's Divorce or something like that. And it said, if you are reading this, then this is what just happened to you. And it was uncanny, including TV shows that were being watched, magazines were there, age of the last child. Like it was eerie. And it said that 95% of divorces are this exact scenario. Well, that told me a lot when I thought about it, like, okay, why is that happening? And how is it that it's always the same? And The only conclusion you can come up to is somebody is contriving this in some way. Like there's some impetus that is making this happen. Now that ties in with the court. you know, and, you know, cutting to a long story short, when I got into court and I was immersed in it like that and very, you know, was very aggressive and very overwhelming and organized, and, you know, there was this fear element, and it was just very, it was moving way too fast for me. I didn't understand exactly what was happening to me. This is all, you know, at the same time as just trying to adjust to a divorce and five kids and the emotional, you know, depression and everything that goes with that. So I was immersed in it. And once I kind of came to, and I was a self litigant, I was trying to figure out what was going on in there, because it didn't make any sense based on my understanding of what court was and what Canada was and what law was and all that. It seemed like there was some other agenda in there. And, you know, over a period of time, I did figure it out that the child support order is a bill of exchange. So I'm kind of jumping the gun here, but that's what I was experiencing in the beginning, that they were just trying to get through the, you know, the people talking, the wife and the husband talking, and, you know, they kept bringing up the, you know, the children, in the interest of the children. But really what the interest of the children was to get this document called a child support order. And the child support order has, if you look up the definitions of what a bill of exchange is, a child support order fits that definition. In other words, parent A, usually the dad, but not always, parent A is going to pay parent B. So there's two names on it. One is paying the other an exact amount and an exact time and a signature, and the judge is the signature. That, by definition, is money. And the court keeps the original order, which is a bill of exchange. That's part of the whole divorce industry, is to get to creating those bills that the court keeps and or the government. So it's really well organized, and not everybody understands what's going on there, including lawyers, et cetera. But this is after, you know, years of discovery, that I went back to that original inkling inside me that was, there was something wrong in here. Like, there's something wrong and I can't figure out what it is. And that's what it was. It was, they had an agenda to just get to that bill of exchange, and they didn't care about anything else, including the either parent or the children.
This is so interesting. So we're diving deeper into this, which goes way beyond even the courts kind of being there as a body in order to help the parents negotiate a settlement of any kind. This is what you're talking about in even the languaging of the bill of exchange and what the courts are going after. This is going beyond that. So what are we talking about here? Because when you're talking about the courts wanting to get to the bill of exchange, what relevance does that bill of exchange have?
The bill of exchange, by definition, is money in a Canadian Act. So if you look up the Financial Administration Act for Canada, and you go into the preliminary part, the definition section, so just at the very beginning before the Act actually starts, you'll see a definition area. And if you look up the definition of money under M, you will see it will say includes negotiable instruments. The very next definition, because it's M and then N, is negotiable instruments. And part of that, there's a list of things that are included in negotiable instruments. And one of those is a bill of exchange, except most people don't know what a bill of exchange is. We're never taught it. And certain families are all taught it. If you come from a banking family, you know exactly what a bill of exchange is. You're taught it from an early stage. And so a bill of exchange is by definition money, and they are creating money in the court system through the divorce industry. that's the goal. And if you added up as many court orders for child support or any kind of payment from one spouse to the other, those are all bills of exchange, and they are all money, and the court has the originals. In other words, they got the money.
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So this kind of takes us back to our personal journey when we started to originally hear about, you know, common law versus admiral law. 3 years ago, when we started to hear about straw man, when we started to hear about birth certificates being sold in the stock market.
UCC. And
can you tell us can we backtrack a little bit? And because your investigation and your hunch that you kind of got that this is well beyond the jurisdiction of just the court assisting families in separation, your hunch in needing to actually investigate and go beyond what was the evidence that was before you, and you started to do the excavation, what did you start to realize when you went further into it? Can you speak to us a little bit more about
I think
the birth certificate and how things are set up from the time that we were born and the number?
Yeah. So when I became a self litigant, when I first got served divorce papers, I got a lawyer like everybody else. And then once the lawyers got our house, they dropped both of us. So the lawyers worked together to get our house. And then as soon as that was sold, we didn't see them again. So we were both self litigants by default. Like, our lawyers basically fired us once they got the house. And so these are the types of things that, like, what is going on here, and why does the judge think this is somehow okay? Where is the justice? Where is the in the best interest of the kids? All these terms they're saying all these things that make it look like they're trying to negotiate a separation, but they're not. There's things going on that don't fit that story, and I was experiencing them. And so I came, I was trying to figure out what was going on. And like I said, I came into this dad's divorce thing, and that sparked me, like, okay, well, how does this person, I don't even know who it is on this website, but it was like they were living in my house. Like, how do you know what magazines and what TV shows were being watched and what friends were saying? And like, oh, it was uncanny. It was like a list of about 12 things. Boom, boom, boom. I hit them all. Like, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, what, how is this possible? So that's when I started starting to think, like, okay, there's something going on here. And I had that hunch inside was more of that. And so, this was starting to be revealed to me. So As I started diving into things, I started to find these guys out there, that were talking about alternative law and alternative things that I'd never heard of, like birth certificate and capitalized name, and like, what is all this? Because I was never exposed to anything like that before. I had no idea this was, being spoken above or had any truth to it or whatever. But so I started finding these guys, and there was quite a few here in Vancouver. Mm. Vancouver was a kind of a hotbed back then of some of the, first people that were detaxing and all that stuff.
Are we talking about, Cal?
We're talking like 2002-ish is when my divorce was, or 2000, like it was probably 2002, something like that. So, and then consequently after that. So a lot of the names that were mentioned in the Meads versus Meads case in Alberta about these, law gurus were I saw these people. because quite a few of them lived here in Vancouver. So I didn't know them, but I had, you know, gone to meetings and these guys were speaking and you know, it was all above my head. And I'm like, you know, just deer in the headlights. What is all this? You know, like, where did all this come from? Like, what, where have I been? Like, you know, how have I missed all this or whatever it is, right? Or is this all real even?
Yeah.
Or are these people nuts? Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm a pretty grounded person. So, I dove in and, you know, tried a couple things. There was one local guy who, you know, took us under his wing a little bit and, you know, started learning about the birth certificate thing and the capitalized name and, not detailed stuff, but at least there was this idea of a straw man or a fictitious representation of my name that was being used in some way that, you know, didn't necessarily apply to me, a flesh and blood man. That was the overall teaching. It's a lot more complex than that, but at that time, that's what I was, you know, told. And so that's what I was trying is like, you can't make me do this. You can't make me come to court. You can't, you know, do all this stuff because that's not me. That, you know, that was the general gist of what I was being taught at that time and what I was trying in court. And it didn't go over well. So it didn't have that results that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's kind of where that all started. And then it was just one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, until I hit commerce. And once I hit commerce, that opened up this jurisdiction called law merchant, even though they weren't really saying that at the time, but that's what happened to me. And I started to realize that everything was commercial. So, including that whole straw man idea, that's all based in commerce. So, understanding commerce rather than trying to get away from the name, I started to use the name to my advantage. So I started playing the game with the piece that I was given instead of trying to get away from the piece. And that made the biggest difference in my life. That was definitely the turning point, you know, where the tide stopped coming in and started going out. And then it was, you know, that journey from that point on, I eventually got free of the system where they just don't deal with me at all anymore.
Kel, can you break down for people? Because it's like there's sort of two different systems that are kind of at play. And it sounds like for the most part, we are playing in one specific system, but there's this other system that's available to us. But we almost need to invoke it to be able to actually access it. I'm wondering if you can explain to people what system are we currently in that basically when we think about the legal system in Canada or in the United States and many different places in the world, what is the system that everybody pretty much is a part of? And then what is this other system that you're speaking about that basically you were able to start to tap into?
Well, we're all part of every possible system. So you got to really get that. That's something you want to think about. But what we're told is there's a system, it's called the legal system or the legal society, and it's run by these things called courts. And there's lawyers that do the interpretation of that thing for you or represent you in some way, which means represent you. So that goes back into that straw man thing. So they're not presenting you as a man or woman, they're presenting you as a birth certificate game piece in a bigger game. So, so that's the gist of it. We're told things, and that's why when I went into court, my understanding of what court and Canada was based on whatever information I got through the TV or school or whatever it is. But yeah, it wasn't correct. It wasn't 100% wrong either, but there was something else going on in there. And so that's that other jurisdiction that I'm alluding to. So there's a hidden jurisdiction, hidden in plain view, called law merchant. And it's ancient. It's not taught in law school, and yet it exists. because you can see it in modern acts mentioned. So if it's a fable or a myth, or, you know, because there's a lot of teachings out there saying Law Merchant is a myth. Well, why is it in a federal act in Canada? Like, why did they mention it in Section 9 of the Bills of Exchange Act? They wouldn't put a myth in a federal act. So it does exist. It just, they're not taught it. Most lawyers are not. It's not taught at law school. So they don't think it exists, but it does. And that it was for merchant class only. So here's the catch. Here's how it works. The law merchant was for the merchant class only, going back in time past the Middle Ages, even into antiquity. So they had these rules and or customs. They were not written down laws. It was fluid, because it had to adjust itself for the whatever was happening in commerce at that time, and all the different countries and all the different merchandise. And all. So it was always more of principles and customs than rule number one, rule number two, rule number three. So that said, that was adjudicated at the international fairs in what were called pie powder courts. And you can look these up. They're historical, even in Canada. And the pie powder courts were run by the merchants themselves, and the litigation was very swift. It was done within hours, not months, like the common law court was. And it was based more or less on what is now called equity. So it was based on coming to an agreement that made sense. Like it wasn't hard to put this in words. It was based on what would be considered right and wrong at that time, and that could change. So a year later, that what was right is now wrong. So it was, or not as right. So it was dynamic. It was fluid. It moved, and that because of its speed and its equitable outcomes, for the most part, it became very attractive. And a lot of people wanted to go there instead of the King's Court. So there was actually a little bit of competition. Now, in there was also the Admiralty Courts. And a lot of people talk about Admiralty law, and they think that's what's going on in the court. And sometimes it is, but most of the time, it's not. It's this other thing called Law Merchant. And that's the hidden thing that's hidden in plain view. And they don't talk about it, so most people don't understand that it exists. But once you do, it changes everything. It changes your whole outlook on what's happening in there. And it provides remedy for you, because in Admiralty, there are no, other than bonds, there are no commercial instruments like promissory notes and bills of exchange in particular. In the Law Merchant, there is. And that's what they don't want you to know. They don't want you to know that you can take a pen and a piece of paper, put ink on that piece of paper, and it can become money in their system. That was for the merchant class only. And that's why the merchant class is the merchant class. That said, what they did was they fused the law merchant into the common law in the 1700s in a case by Lord Mansfield. It's a famous case. And it got actually they put the Law Merchant inside the King's Courts instead of it being out on its own. It's been there ever since, but people just stopped talking about it. So you could go into the building of the King's Courts, but you could have a Law Merchant court case in there, if you understand that. So the merchants were okay with this, because we could still have our Law Merchant customs and our ways, and the fast litigation not based on proving everything to the nth degree. It was available now inside the King's Courts.
Cal, could they choose which system they wanted to use then? Like if they wanted to, you know, if they had a dispute, they would choose then to either do it through Law Merchant or through common law at that time?
Yes. After Lord Mansfield fused it together. So the merchants could still have Law Merchant, but it was inside the venue of the King's Courts. they wanted more control of it. So the judges were to take judicial notice of the law merchant when there was a merchant dispute or a merchant case before them. Here's the kicker. With the birth certificate, they turned us all into merchants. Therefore, every case that comes into a common law court in North America or around the world is a merchant case. Therefore, they can move into law merchant, but they're not telling you that that's what's happened. That's what's going on. That's the thing that I'm trying to get across to people, that this is what's happening. And once you do a little bit of research and understand what I'm talking about, you will see it in there. And they will move into law merchant and not tell you.
So when initially it was the law merchant became utilized, it was basically to cater to the commerce, the trading that was taking place, because people couldn't wait for so long for an issue to be resolved or met. So therefore it had to be expedited through the law merchant. Is that correct? Is that why it was implemented?
We don't even know when it was implemented. It's ancient. It goes back into antiquity. If you go back into Hammurabi time, they had what we would call commercial instruments and or advanced banking ideas on clay tablets. And this is before there were signatures. You had a cylinder that you rolled, and that was your signature. Everybody had their own cylinder. So that's how you endorsed these instruments. And once a debt was paid, they would actually break the instrument itself, the clay, so that, okay, that debt's now gone. So this stuff goes way back. People think banking is and lending and interest and put options and all this stuff is all modern. It's not. It's old. And that's the thing. This is a very old system. They just tried to make it good, like it's out of our awareness, and that therefore they can take advantage of the whole world through this law merchant system.
Cal, how did this awareness of the merchant, the law merchant being utilized within the court system assist you in getting a divorce?
Well, it didn't assist me in getting a divorce, but it assisted me in them dropping the child support enforcement leg of this thing. What, you know, the FMEP stuff where they get a very aggressive, they put attachments on your wherever you work, on your banks, on your, you know, they take your passport away, they take your drive, like all that. I got away from that. And not to say that I, you know, and I know I got you get painted with this brush, which is on purpose, deadbeat dad, and that's put into everybody's mind. And so I was fighting against that too. I'm fighting against a societal and cultural mindset that if I'm fighting that thing, then I must be a deadbeat dad and don't want to take care of my kids. And that's far from the truth. So,
did you call me? Because I thought I heard.
I'm just on a call. So, yeah.
Oh, sweetie pie.
Remember that?
Yeah. Can you go and watch TV, and then I'll make supper in a while. Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah. So that's the long and the short of it. The law merchant used to be independent and it worked at the fairs, and then they in the state what were called staple towns. And I'm talking about England. They had more, it was more established. They had a building and the Lord Mayor was presided over it. So it was closer to a court rather than the Pie Powder courts. It was just very, very informal at the fairs themselves. So these staple towns where there were certain port towns where a lot of merchandise went through and like staples like wool or grain or whatever it was. So they had these things called staple courts as well, and they were more established. And they really started to compete with the King's courts, which were the Exchequer, the Court of Common Pleas, and the King's Bench. So the Exchequer mostly was to try and deal with commerce and tax. So there was a competition there. So they fused it in, and that's the key to understanding what has happened. And when a court is saying that they're operating under summary judgment, or they're moving summarily, you'll hear a judge say, can I move summarily? That's usually a key that they're moving into law merchant. So it's not based on facts. It's based on probabilities. They'll say these types of things, but it's not, they're not in the common law, and they're not in statutory law either, really. The statutes are what is driving the offense or whatever it is that they're calling, but it's always merchant law at the heart of just about every case. It has to do with money. Every case that goes into a court is money. So it's all law merchant. So in answer to your question, once I did my first move in law merchant, even though I didn't have a full understanding of what it was or what it was I was doing, you know, I wouldn't just frivolously throw stuff around. I would try and research, but I wouldn't wait till I researched until, I got 100% of all the knowledge, because you'll never get there. I still don't have 100% of the knowledge. But I learned enough where I acted, and then I saw the reactions of the judges. And that's what told me, okay, this is different than, trying to get away from the name and any of those other tactics that I had tried. Because I'm now seeing the judges run out of the room, not come in the room, recuse themselves from the case, retire. Nobody wants to be on the case. All this behavior, and it was just so much of it that, we knew that we were definitely hitting the mark with this law merchant and these commercial processes. And they couldn't seem to get on top of it. Like, there was no jurisdiction that they could jump to get, okay, you can't do that because of this. It didn't, and to this day, it still doesn't exist. Law merchant is as far as they can go.
Interesting. So you're kind of implying that the lawyers might not be aware of it, but the judge is aware of the game.
I would say that most lawyers don't know about it. Some did. And most judges do know about it, but some didn't. Mm. So there was definitely an upgrade from lawyer to judge as far as understanding law merchant and, the existence of it, at least. They may not understand everything that was going on, but they were definitely afraid of something. Mm-hmm. And so we just kept, okay, if you're afraid, we're going to keep doing that. That was it. How I came into the knowledge was just through trial and error, and then watching the reactions and then repeating. And if I get the same result over and over or a similar result, then okay, this is real. I need to understand more about this. And so I went further into that and, tried to study as much as I could.
Cal, where does merchant law fall with then the admiralty maritime law? Because like a lot of times what you hear is people say, oh, well, you can't do that because you're operating in admiralty maritime law or civil law, and you need to be functioning in natural law or common law. But where does merchant law fall between? It sounds like it's its own separate category.
It was. They fused admiralty in as well. So going back to the Middle Ages is a good place to see all this in action. So there was admiralty, and it also competed, and there was, it kept going back into the king's courts and then back out into more military under admiral. And same with the law merchant. It was this constant who's got the jurisdiction. It was almost, some treatises have said it was actual competition. They were, regardless of whether they were competing, there was this back and forth about who was covering what. So the main thing that admiralty covered was boats and anything on the water. Here's the thing, it interfaces, because the merchants were putting the stuff on the boats, sending it to another merchant. So it never stayed on the water. It came from the land, got on a boat, went to another spot, and then went back on the land. So who's covering what is always the Like, where does one stop and the other start? So there was always this overlap, and they fused both of them into the common law so that there was this more central thing to stop that back and forthness, if you want to put it that way. So they're both in the common law, and that's why judges will move. It seems like the truther movement is aware of this admiralty, but nobody talks about law merchant.
And well, that's one of the different things that you've kind of brought awareness to is it's not really necessarily admiralty law or common law. It's this sort of binding thread between them that sounds like the court systems tend to go to at some port because that's where the contract takes place. And so from your experience then, how do you had mentioned that there's a way that you can change things, and then there's a way that you can provide remedy when you're working within that system. How are you able then to utilize that system for your benefit and to actually be able to get your rights back?
The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, you never lose your rights. You waive them. That's another concept you got to understand. Certain rights cannot be taken from you. And I should go into the rights thing now too. According to the Bible, we're given dominion. That's not rights. I mean, we have the right to that dominion, but rights, generally speaking, is I recognize you as an oppressor. Mm-hmm. But I want less oppression.
Yeah.
Where dominion is, you're in my seat, move.
Very different.
Well, and the system is set up like that. I mean, we were just at a town council meeting, and the mayor was there, and it's like, it's very hierarchical structure. I mean, what do they even have to call?
I almost feel like, Cal, that they're actually trained to interact
with people
in a particular way. Because the way the mayor actually spoke with the people who were given permission to come and
give their
2 minutes, and you're not actually allowed to speak outside of the 2 minutes that you're given, you're granted. But she actually told the people not to clap. You're not allowed to clap here. Just the way that we were being spoken to, it's like we were children.
And told the one lady to actually don't look up there, look me in the face when you're talking to me. Like, I mean, you know, almost like you're a child.
Very patronizing.
But worse than how you should be speaking to children. You shouldn't even speak to children like that, right?
This is how the court system is set up, and even the building is set up that way. Like they're up on a podium almost all the time. They have costumes that intimidate. Everything is about intimidation. I'm above you. You have to plead to me.
Mm.
You have to beg to me for any kind of remedy or any kind of rights, when that's not how it's set up. And like going back into the Bible, and then, you know, the king's oath and all that. So he has to uphold that oath, and we are given dominion on page one of the Bible. So that's our claim before the Most High God. And that's our position, and they agree to it. That's why he has to take that oath. And he didn't want to.
This is really interesting, Cal. When you speak of, you know, the maritime law, the commerce, the law merchant, when you say there was a competition between, you know, there could possibly was a competition between who would gain jurisdiction over these things, who's they? Like, who is it that ultimately is laying down the groundwork under which we then have to abide by?
That is a really good question, and everybody needs to think about that. In my opinion, because we all talk about they, And there's this innate understanding of who they are, but we don't specifically, if you ask, you know, can you specifically describe that? We don't have the words for it, but we know that there is a they, and we know exactly who they are, even somewhere inside. In my opinion, the they is the offspring of something that happened a long time ago. Mm. It's written in the Genesis 6, and more specifically in the Book of Enoch.
Wow.
So there is a DNA strand here that is part man, like part of Adam and Eve, that Homo sapien DNA strand, and and another species that's also hominoid that is different. They feel that they are elite. You start to get the picture. They are blue bloods. Start to get the picture. They are royals.
Mm. Goosebumps. Yeah.
Yeah. They tend to breed amongst themselves. The banking families, the uber rich. The reason why they're uber rich is because they decided a long time ago that there would be countries and there would be rulers over those countries. And they decided there's going to be this stuff called money. And it's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they are controlling everything is through money.
Mm-hmm.
At the root of it.
This is really interesting because we learned recently that money is not native to this planet. It was actually introduced as a way to control the population. And it's a game that they invented in order to pull the strings. And I mean, right now it is an interesting time too, because we're making the transition for greater control to be attempted by moving into the digital currency that they are overseeing and they will be implementing. So we're definitely at the crossroads of where it is that we give up our freedom and where we choose to step out into liberation. And we're making that decision. And this is why we're so excited to have this conversation, because I feel like even if you don't understand all the pieces of it, which we didn't, because it's a completely different language. And I feel like it's a completely different language that we haven't been privy to, we haven't been educated on, for very good reason, because it has great impact if we ultimately understand the game and know our place in it and exercise accordingly, then we can move forward and out of these outdated systems with greater efficacy and in a much more accelerated fashion.
Well, a lot of what's come up, Cal, with some of the different people we've spoken to around this is in this process of starting to understand like what you've gone through. And, you know, when we talked to you and a couple of other people, you hit a point at some point going through all this where you step into a real genuine understanding and knowing of the immensity of who you really are and what you're actually God-given, so to speak.
And it usually comes from a point of like what you said, well, this can't be right. Well, that doesn't make sense. This doesn't feel mm-hmm. right. It usually stems from there.
Yeah. And it seems like in the process of going through this, you know, I think a lot of times we go, you know, these are different concepts that have come through. We were thinking about this in many ways, but it's like a lot of times people are just waiting for their freedom to kind of just show up in a certain way. And this process has really made it evident that it's like, it's not something that's going to just be given. You have to claim it. Like you actually have to claim it, because it's literally like claiming your birthright. And so the way it was explained by one person that had gone through a lot of this process said, it's almost like if you don't, then they will then look over you. It's like, if you're not able to kind of step into being really fully responsible for yourself and your own actions and all of those things, then somebody else will take that job for you. So I feel like this is a part of this almost like rites of passage that's taking place where people are being push to start to utilize these and actually understand where it all kind of began.
The
this comes to the end of our time for this episode, please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.